Hello, this is Brooke Devard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. I'm really excited about my guest today. I have Sarah Gioff with me in from, are you coming from Paris?
Yeah.
Okay, in from Paris. You are, I'm trying to think of the right adjectives to this, like content creator, extraordinaire, designer, business owner, digital innovator. How do you describe yourself?
Well, it's really, really difficult because I'm doing just so much.
Yeah.
But usually when people ask me, I'm just saying that I'm a creative entrepreneur.
Okay.
I think it just, you know, gather everything.
That's everything. And what brings you to New York? Fashion Week?
Well, this time I'm not coming for Fashion Week. I'm just here to take some meetings, introduce the brand to the American, you know, market.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Great. So you live in Paris most of the time?
Yeah. Now I'm living between Paris and Dakar, because as you know, I've launched the e-commerce Tongo, and I have to be on soil to take care of the production, and and everything happens in Senegal, so I have to be here half of the year.
Amazing. Tongoro is an absolutely gorgeous fashion line. I have one of the tops. I'm obsessed with it. I wear it all the time. And you started it, what, a year ago?
So I started working on it about 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I've launched the e-commerce end of May. So it's been like about 3 months now.
Yeah.
But I started the communication last year.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Who do you think has better style, New Yorkers or Parisians?
Okay. So it's very, very difficult to choose because I feel like the vibe is very different.
Mm-hmm.
Parisian, you know, there's this thing about, like, for example, Parisian women, what I love to call it the coiffée des coiffées. It's like your hair is combed, but not really.
Okay,
you know, it's like negligé, but it's made on purpose.
I would really fit in there because
I'm not really into it.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, but I love the sense of aesthetic that Parisian have because it's very, you know, we have like a set of colors. It's not something too crazy. It's very elegant. It's timeless.
Yeah.
In New York, what I love is that people dare more to, you know, try something different. They own their personality and you translate into their the way they style themselves and into their clothing. So I really like that. But also, New York style is very like eclectic. You cannot define how one New Yorker would dress.
True.
Although you can define how a Parisian would dress.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So
you gave a very diplomatic politician's answer where you didn't put anyone down. I would say, having spent time in both places, you are more likely to see someone who looks like a hot mess in New York City. Would you agree? I mean,
yeah,
in Paris, women don't walk around like looking crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
Because
that's
there's like much more of a sense of like, this is how you dress to be appropriate in public. And in New York, there's just...
Yeah. But I think the approach to dressing is also different because of the, I would say, I don't know if I can say the mentality, but in France it's like, what would people think? And in New York it's more like, I'm doing me.
Right.
You know
like
what
I
mean?
I don't give a fuck
so,
what anyone
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Interesting. Now, one of the things, so it's Fashion Week now, my Instagram feed is like filled with like all of these pictures. It's very annoying. Do you feel like the like hashtag culture of fashion has kind of taken overshadowed the clothing? There was a story in the New York Times about how the hashtag has basically made the actual clothes, the collection, the reason why everyone's there. It's not even part of the conversation anymore.
Mm. Well, I'm not a crazy hashtagger to start, so I'm not really like into that.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's taking over, like right now, everybody wants their picture to be noticed and everything, and they feel like if I hashtag this, it's gonna come up.
I
don't know how the algorithm works on Instagram or anything, but to me, I feel like it's just best to share like a nice picture, like a moment that really can trigger an emotion within the eyes of the people that follows you, instead of just like posting a picture to show that you're here, so you have to hashtag so that you can, you know, so you're gonna be included in the group of people that were at this event or at this show. And I don't know, it's just not.
It's too much.
Yeah, it's too much.
Your Instagram is beautiful. It's like this highly curated, like, photo book. Like, I could never. And I mean, I think it's great because you really are inspiring people with each picture, video, post that you have. I think on the other end of that, I remember, was it last season that you were here for the Givenchy show in New York? So brands invite you to things for you to cover. I mean, they're inviting you because they like you, but they're also inviting you because they know you have the social reach and social influence. So do you feel that pressure to post once you're invited?
Not at all. Because
really? Good for you.
I don't, because first, I don't consider myself like a digital influencer or anything, because I don't use my digital presence to do something. My digital, like, my website is my work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I have a blog and I'm going to go there and, you know, show that I was here. Mm-hmm. No, if I choose to publish a moment of a show or a picture of a backstage or something, it's because I was really inspired at this moment. Or I saw something that was, oh my God, this is the moment. This is something that I want to share with the people that follow me, because out of this moment, I'm going to create something that's going to maybe inspire someone else.
Right.
So it's like inspiration inspire you to do something inspiring.
Right.
kind of.
Yeah.
But no, besides that, I don't feel the pressure to, I mean, if you feel the pressure, either you paid to post something, you know, or your life depends on it and it's not my case. Yeah. So
how do you feel about all of these social influencers that are getting paid to post from brands?
Well, I will define myself as a child of the digital, you know, because when I first started Goobar, it was online and it's still online.
Yeah.
So I think it's an amazing thing that people who have talent can benefit from the system, from the digital thing that's going on right now. On the other end, I think sometimes brand make bad choices because it's all about exposure, and you forget the quality at the end, because I think when you're a brand, you have to stay on brand and really
it can cheapen the
and communicate with people that really like embrace the essence of what you are. So 50-50.
So on the topic of social influencers, and this is kind of bringing it back to beauty, the Kardashians obviously are this global phenomenon, but they were made in America and kind of became popular here. Do you feel like the Kardashians could have reached the like iconic status that they have now in Paris? And like, how do people abroad feel about them?
Well, most people love them.
Wow.
But the thing is, you know, and I can't say that because I'm have the European point of view.
Yeah.
Everything that's happened in America and is a phenomenon.
Yeah.
We can't impact on how we live in Europe and the rest of the world, because the center of the world, you know, either you like it or not, it's America.
Yeah.
As far as beauty, I would say that, you know, Kim kind of changed the way most people view women, you know, especially in Europe, because if you're not skinny, tall, blonde in Paris and you want to make it in fashion, for example, let's say, it's super, super difficult. Like it was like about 7 years ago. Now today, they know that the standards are not the same. And thanks to the digital and all those people that showcase a different type of beauty and are part of fashion
really
and the fashion conversation, it gives hope to, you know, whoever.
Someone who may be curvier, have darker
skin.
Yeah,
exactly. To be dreaming about being the face of, I don't know, a big brand or a big powerhouse someday. So there is a good impact, and there's also like a really, really, really bad side of it, because you know, like, I don't like to badmouth people, you know, but for example, Kylie Jenner, she's so young, but the way she, like, what she reflects, and
it's very overly sexualized.
It's too much. It's too much for someone of her age.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing what she's doing from a business point of view, her mother and herself, what they're doing with the beauty line. It's amazing, because you have to take advantage of the influence that you have on the digital to do something for yourself and not just rely on being on a TV show that doesn't bring anything to anyone.
Yeah.
So that's good. But she could use that and turn it into like something more empowering for women than just like selling lipsticks and, you know.
Yeah. But you have to be smart to do that, so
yeah.
And I know you're the nicest person, you'll never say anything bad about anyone. So you, and neither do I, fit the standard of this like tall, blonde fashion girl.
Definitely.
What was it like kind of breaking into the fashion industry? And also if you could give some background on like where you're from and when you came to Paris.
So I was born in Paris from a half Congolese and Senegalese father and a half Central African and Senegalese mother. I grew up in Côte d'Ivoire for most of my life and came back to Paris when I was 12 when the political situation in Abidjan was crazy. And so I pursue my studies in communication, marketing, and then I decided to launch my own magazine.
Online. Which is how I found you.
Goubar. That was 8 years ago. First, when I started, to be honest with you, like, I was overweight. Like, I lost a lot of weight over the years, and I wasn't comfortable enough in my skin to be out there and be the face of my own magazine, because I knew that beyond the project, people want to know who's, you know, they want to identify with the person that's behind, because the product is amazing, but we love the story. People love the story of the person that's behind the project. I wasn't comfortable doing this because I know that I wasn't fitting the fashion standard, especially in Paris, because it's super, super tough. I don't know how it is in New York. I feel like I had more, I was more welcome to participate into New York Fashion Week earlier than I was in Paris, because, you know, the Parisian fashion houses are very, you know, Chanel and Balmain.
They can be racist. And sizist and all of those other
things. I don't
know
if it's about racism, but it's just like everything in Paris is about tribes and, and crews and kind of caste. And who do you know?
You're
coming, you want to, like, is she like a friend of a friend? You know, it works like that. Here in New York, I feel like it's more like a meritocracy. If your work is good, you can access it, because we need people that are talented that's going to, you know, talk about this designer, because you're going to have like another point of view. Like, my point of view is Africa and it's like black beauty. So when I decide to style Alexander Wang or another brand, it's always going to be different than the way Elle or Vogue is going to style it, you know? So it was very, very difficult to break in. But I think at some point, when you just don't quit, they have to accept you. They have, you know, you're here and you, and I put in the work, you know, I really put in the work. My magazine wasn't as cool or as high fashion that it is maybe today. I have the pretension to say that.
I think it's always been, for me, it's always been, I think that to see so many just drop dead gorgeous, like, models of color styled in the way that you guys have always styled them. I mean, it's always been really beautiful, and I think I can see as it's adapted and changed how it's gotten even better and better, but it was always good.
Oh, thank you.
It was never, you know?
I think you tend just to be super more, like, more critic when it's your own work, so maybe that's why I don't see it this way. But, yeah, it was tough, but we didn't quit. My team and I, we worked harder, and we decided to elevate the quality of the content that we wanted to deliver. And now when I reach out to those houses, well, we attend the show. I don't even want to attend the show anymore. Like, I've been doing this, and it's crazy because I'm 28. But when I talk to, like, some people, I'm like, I've been going to shows for the past 8 years. And running, and, you know, some shows, it's cool because you get to know the people. They like you, they like your work. Oh, Sarah, I get to see front row, and it's cool because you're first. But at the end of the day, right now, I don't see myself running all day just to see a show when I can just log on to, like, former ripstyle.com, but Vogue Runway, you know, to see the show live and just sitting, like, in my house and do some work, you know? So I think at some point it gets boring, and even the people in the fashion industry know that, but it's just about maybe keeping appearances and be I'm here. You don't have to be there unless it's your, like, unless this job feeds you. And it wasn't the case for me, so I decided just to, you know, reevaluate and take another direction.
I think that's great. I mean, I was on Facebook the other day, I get, like, 7 years ago today, and it's, like, pictures of you and me in Paris.
Oh,
like,
my God.
And it's like, we've been doing this for so long.
Oh, my God, I remember. It was the Ellie Sapp show.
Oh, my God, it's literally so long ago. So, I want to talk to you about how Africa has inspired your work, and then also just this larger influence that I'm seeing Africa having in, like, beauty and fashion overall. Yeah. Obviously, natural hair is very popular now. I see a lot of African models being embraced. There's definitely a really strong influence. how have you seen it kind of play out?
Well, on my hand, I would say that Africa has always been a huge part of my work because, well, it's where I'm from.
Yeah.
And obviously, I have the chance to have this double culture. Well, I have the Western African culture, but I also have the European culture because, you know, I live in France.
Right.
So, I think the way I see it is just that at some point, when we look for inspiration as far as art the in the art world or the culture, you know, at some point, Asia was very popular. But once you've taken everything you had to take there, you're running out of inspiration. Where do you go? Where somewhere you haven't tapped into yet.
Yeah.
And I think Africa was the last part of the cycle, you know? And now it's just very popular. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody wants to come. But we've always been there. You know,
true.
Why now? True. But it's also very interesting because now I think as far as development, Africa is like rising. Yeah. We didn't have like a fashion industry for so long because the way our fashion industry, if I can call it like that, used to work wasn't the way you would... There was no like Dakar Fashion Week about like 15 years ago or Abidjan Fashion Week or anything, and everything is happening now because we reach a pace and also a state of development that allows people to invest money in art and culture. So I think it's gonna be like the world is gonna look even more.
It feels like the beginning of something.
Yeah, it's the beginning of a new era. It's definitely the beginning of a new era. And somehow I feel like we've always influenced the world, but it was just like on a smaller
scale. How do you think beauty trends, what do you see women doing in Africa that you think is interesting?
Okay, so this is very funny because all the things that we call trends, like the bantu knots, and for example, everybody's talking about braids at work and stuff like that, you know?
They're like, we've been doing this.
I mean, it's not even a trend. Like, because I don't know, 15 years ago, we didn't have like sewing. For example, you know, and the only way we would like protect our hair was to
do braids or bantu.
So it's very funny to see, oh, so this is a trend, but this is how my grandma used to wear hair, you know, all the time.
Right.
So, I mean, what do you want to say, you know?
No, I think that's really interesting. And I think we talk about natural hair being a trend, and this is something that I talked to Lila and Aisling about, but it's like, how can the way that I'm born be a trend?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Is there, what do you think is like the biggest difference? So like if you were to see three girls, one girl is a 25-year-old living in Dakar, one is a 25-year-old living in Paris, one in New York, would you be able to tell who was from where?
I think so.
And how would you be able to tell the girl from Dakar?
The way she dresses, probably, if I'm talking about three black girls, the way her skin is, because obviously when I'm in Dakar, I'm darker than I'm here. In Paris, the skin also, because I think, oddly enough, like the sun, sometimes everybody is, you know, everybody tells that it's not good for your skin, but it's actually really, really good.
Yeah, your skin, I feel like, really thrives when you're in, if you still have to wear sunscreen, but I feel like I always look better after like a
Caribbean. When I'm in Paris, my skin is awful.
Yeah.
Like I had like the most perfect skin in Dakar about like 2 weeks ago. And I came through Paris and now I have pimple everywhere. It's horrible. I don't know. It's something with the hair or the water. I don't know. I have no idea.
It's probably the water.
But definitely, the hairstyle also. Like when you live in Paris, it's so much more expensive to get braids. It may be like 70 times more expensive than,
Wow.
Like I pay like $5.
What?
To get my braids.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh. Well, no one can see from listening, but you have these immaculate, gorgeous long braids, or probably like 1,000 braids in your head.
Yeah.
But they look amazing.
So
that was $5.
Yeah, $5.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm like flying there to get my braids done.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So beauty, the way we see beauty is definitely more accessible on the continent. In Paris, so everybody will have like sew-in. in America, it's even more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like either, and I feel everybody has an amazing skin here.
Really?
I swear, everybody has like this very perfect skin.
Huh, interesting.
So, and you can tell when you see an American girl, if she's black,
yeah.
a European girl, and an African
yeah.
girl. You can definitely tell.
Yeah, I guess I could probably tell, but my eye's probably not quite as good as yours is. What do you wish more people knew about Africa?
That is not a country.
Do people really think that?
Well, you know...
Like, I mean, I guess, yes, I've heard that.
You know,
yeah,
it's like, wow. Where are you from? Senegal. Where is that? Africa. Oh, Africa, you know?
Yeah.
We talk about Africa as it was just once, but it's actually the most diverse
right.
continent
right.
ever.
Right.
Like someone who comes from Western Africa, like
right.
me in Senegal,
right.
I have no idea what someone who comes from Ethiopia eats
right.
on a daily basis.
Right.
But, like, I can, you know, because, okay,
right.
maybe I met some Ethiopians
mm-hmm.
once, but I cannot recognize everyone because
right.
I don't know what they look like.
Right.
You know, I've never been there.
Right.
Also, that South Africa is not a real representation of
yeah.
Africa the way people
yeah.
think Africa is.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's very, very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
It's way much more developed because obviously there is, I don't know how to say that, but the presence of maybe foreign people.
All of the white colonizers yeah. oppressed everyone. I'm just going to speak for you. Yeah. Okay.
Better than myself.
The
yeah.
of apartheid. Yeah.
So it's very, very different.
Yeah.
That yeah, there is 54 countries, so therefore 54 different cultures.
Totally different cultures. Yeah.
We have airports.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's a show. There was a great New York Times article about it. It's like Sex in the City, but in Ghana.
Yeah, an African city.
Yes.
So good.
It's so good. And
yeah.
I was watching it and I was like, you know, it's really a shame. And like these women are very privileged, obviously. And they're talking about, oh, my housekeeper, I think she's stealing my bras.
Oh, that's the thing. So it's you don't have to be like super privileged to have a housekeeper.
That it's just
it's
like a common thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's
everyone
a common
has
thing.
Like help.
Yeah.
But you do get this sense that the way that Africa tends to be portrayed is like this very impoverished.
Exactly.
And you don't, I think at least in America, you don't see that there are women who just
yeah.
live to go shopping
and
party.
This is why I'm very thankful for social media. And,
yes.
You know, and there's this amazing Instagram, which is called Visite l'Afrique.
Okay.
That's been founded by a girl that I know. Her name is Diane. She's amazing. And so her thing is just to highlight Africa through the travels of
Oh, that's amazing.
The people.
Yeah.
I have to
follow.
And,
yeah.
And it just show you, you know, the beauty of the continent, the beauty of all the places, the different places.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that it's Visite l'Afrique, so visit Africa.
Yeah.
But you can see that, you know, the thing is to portray that it's just not one big country.
Yes.
It's like,
oh
it's a
gosh.
Continent.
Okay.
So yeah, and also I wish that, I just wish that people would embrace African beauty more because the way it's part of the idea that people have of it is sometimes really bad.
Mm.
It's like, oh, all those dark skinned women, you know, they're not pretty. And
mm-hmm.
we just have like one of the most gorgeous women,
people
you know.
Are gorgeous.
So
women and men, I feel like, are.
Yeah.
A lot of gorgeous.
So as far as representation also, I think there's a work, a
mm-hmm.
huge work to be done.
Yeah.
This part, so.
Yeah. Well, you travel all the time.
Yeah.
And traveling wreaks havoc on your beauty routine. Like, I'm so strict about, like, what I, like, even on the plane. Like, I have my Evian facial mist. Like, I have all my lotion. Like, I'm, because planes dehydrate you. You're traveling from different places. You
yeah.
can't pack everything. So I have to be, like, really methodical.
Mm-hmm.
What do you bring with you when you're traveling to make sure that you're, like, maintaining your beauty routine?
Okay, so I have this one cream. It's from Diadermine.
From where?
From Diadermine.
Okay, it sounds really fancy in
French.
It's French.
It's a brand.
Okay.
And I found out that it was the thing that was working for my face. So wherever I travel, I have it with me.
Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned the plane because I actually have my routine.
Yeah.
So I don't put makeup when I travel.
Yeah.
And
brilliant.
As soon as I get into the plane, I put it on my,
yeah.
like I moisturize like crazy.
So much, yeah.
And then I leave it on. I don't use a lot of product.
Yeah.
Because so I'm always so scared that my skin is going to react a certain way, and I have like a very sensitive skin.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's basically the only thing that I use. I have the Evian.
Yes.
Because this is just perfect.
You need that spray. Yeah.
Beside that, just drinking a lot of water.
Water, yeah. I don't even drink on flights. Like, they come by and they're like, champagne, wine? I'm like, please just bring me water.
Exactly.
Like, I don't want to feel even worse when I get off of this plane. And I think what's so interesting about some moisturizer, how quickly your face, like, sucks in the moisturizer speaks to how dehydrated your skin is. So if your skin's well hydrated, moisturizer will, like, kind of settle on top of your skin. If your skin's really dehydrated, which usually, like, sometimes I'll be mid-flight and I'll put on moisturizer and it's just, like, immediately, like...
Sucks in all,
and you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, skin. Like, here's your little drink of water. And one time I forgot my moisturizer on a flight, and so I just went into the bathroom and just like patted water on my face, and that helps too. Like, moisturizer is pretty much just water that you're like adding to your face. Moisturizer, that's a really good tip.
And I wish I had something for the eye because I always look so tired.
Like a good eye cream?
Yeah.
I can give you some recommendations.
Yes.
I think that what's interesting about eye cream is once you find one that really works for you, you like become very addicted to it.
Okay.
I use one, it's called TNS Illuminating Cream. My dermatologist recommended it. It's really good. But the Kiehl's Avocado Eye Cream is really good. And it has all natural ingredients, so it won't irritate your skin.
Nice.
And then I've been reading from a lot of girls online about using shea butter to make your own eye mask, like an overnight eye mask. I'm a little bit worried about that because sometimes shea butter on the skin can cause breakouts.
Yeah, exactly.
So I haven't tried it yet. I still have to do more research, but yeah. Eye cream, face cream. I always bring lip balm. Do you bring lip balm?
Always.
Yeah.
Always with me.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah. You just like, I think the goal on a flight is just to like stay moisturized.
Exactly. I swear.
And then what about when you're traveling? Like, do you bring like travel shampoo and conditioner?
Yes.
Oh. So you bring all of your own stuff.
Yes.
You don't rely on the hotel.
No, never. Yeah. For my hair, I use Phyto Specific.
Okay.
They have like the really, really, really good shampoo.
Mm-hmm.
Then I only put coconut oil on my hair. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very like a basic product.
Yeah, coconut oil is like the holy grail product. It comes up literally every single podcast episode.
Oh,
like
really?
Whether we're talking about like food or like working out or like hair, it's just like
coconut
oil, like for everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So on all of the shows, I ask the guests the top three beauty trends that you're like excited about, that you like, that you've tried, like your top three beauty trends, and then like your worst. And you're the nicest person, so you're probably going to give very safe answers for the worst. But tell me, let's start with the good. What are the top three beauty trends you're excited about?
Well, I was very excited about contouring, but I never managed to succeed, to do it. So I just... left it there. One thing that I want to try right now is it's called the micro pigmentation for the eyebrows.
Oh, I've done it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've done it.
Oh,
it's like it's almost like a tattoo.
Yeah, but it's like
hairbrush strokes.
Yeah,
it's very
I really
painful.
Really want to try it because my brows.
But you have eyebrows.
Yeah,
I did
but
it
it's
because
just
I
that
didn't
it's
have
very
eyebrows.
Like the hair is very very light, so you don't see it, and I have to put like some crayon on it. So I just want something that is here when I wake up, and
the
perfect brows.
I did mine. I did my first one like 5 years ago.
Amazing.
I found this like expert woman in San Francisco, and then I got them redone like every 2 or so years, and I've most recently got it done like a year ago, so they're kind of fading, but. I mean, I think
it looks so natural.
But I really don't have eyebrows. I think if you have eyebrows, like, I don't, like, I'm looking at you, I don't really think you need it. But
I do. Trust me, I do.
Yeah.
Because I'm so dark, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like this the hair is, like, so, it's not pronounced enough, so.
Yeah, I mean, definitely do research and find someone good because it is permanent.
Mm.
And
I
went to a few places and I was like, I would be very upset if that's one of my face. Any other beauty trends you really love?
Something I'm excited about.
Have you seen all the Pat McGrath products?
Oh yeah, it looks so good.
I know.
But the thing is, I think I'm too scared to try it. It's like so flashy and everything, and I'm so dark. So any beauty pop color that I would put on would make me look like a doll.
It's okay to look like a doll sometimes, though. Why not? I mean, yeah. I think Lupita Nyong'o is a great example. I mean, yeah, she has, like, beautiful dark skin, and when she wears, like, color on her face, yeah, it's gorgeous. That's true. Does, like, a blue eyeliner. I think you would look amazing with
the craziest colors. Thing I do is, like, a really, really red, pop red on my lips. Yeah. And that's it.
Spoken like a true French girl. Craziest thing I do is a red lip. Okay. What are the three trends, like, beauty things that you see happening that you don't like?
Oh, God. What did I see?
There's so many.
Yeah, there's just so many.
So many mistakes being made out there.
You know the fake lashes that had, like, extra little thing at the end?
Horrible.
This is a no-no.
Yeah.
Okay, this is, a debate, and people will probably, like, clash me on it, but leaving your hair under your arms, it's like a beauty statement lately.
Oh, not shaving your armpits?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Like, it's not very, I don't know. You know, yeah. I know it's part, like, a feminist moment, like, statement and everything, but no.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is not my thing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting statement. I just don't know how comfortable it would be, right? Because, like, hair traps odors.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just feel like it's not for
me. That's big of a statement.
Yeah. Okay. Much. Anything else?
What else? I'm sure I'm going to think about something after.
Well, this isn't as much of a beauty statement. It's more of something I've noticed in, like, men's fashion, but I was just thinking about it today. All of these guys that are dressing in women's clothing, like, do you know Young Thug?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you saw his album cover. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey, he's in this dress. Jaden Smith kind of, like, wears women's clothes.
Well, I think it's more like the era we're living in.
Yeah, I think it's really cool.
Everything is becoming unisex, you know? There are shops where basically you and your boyfriend can get in and, you know, shop just one one thing, one item for the both of you. So,
I think it's kind of cool. Like, it's something that I'm excited to see, especially in hip-hop that's usually had a very narrow, rigid view of masculinity, see that expand.
But it's a double standard, because they would, like, you know, wear the Givenchy skirts and everything, but still won't be very tolerant towards, you know, gay people. So, it's a trend.
Yeah.
Let's see how it goes.
Yes. And you brought up the great trend, which we talked about in the episode with Lila, about how all of these fashion houses are using black faces.
Oh, my God.
To promote their brands, like ASAP Rocky at Dior. Yeah. I think
it has never been a better time to be black, to be honest with you. And the same as being African. Because everybody, oh, my God, it's amazing. You're black and you're African. Like, you know, what can we do with this girl? Because, you know, she's cool and she's got the thing that everybody wants at the moment.
Right.
I just hope it's not just going to be a trend, because we're finally being accepted where a door used to be closed to us.
Yes.
I think it's also our job to be smart enough to stay.
Yes.
And everybody use everyone. But if they use you, be smart enough to use them to
get something done.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
That is great advice. That is great advice.
So, especially in fashion, you know, people take, and the day they don't need you anymore, they don't pay attention to you.
Right.
So, yeah, but I think hip-hop and especially now black beauty are two things that fashion need.
Yes,
because,
absolutely.
First of all, it represents, it's a market, so they can make money out of it. And culturally, you cannot ignore it anymore.
Yeah.
So you have to embrace it and work with those people. So
absolutely.
We're here to stay.
Yes. Do you have, I've noticed that a lot of people that work in the industry kind of have, like, a uniform or, like, a signature look, right? Like, they don't stray too much. Like, Alexander Wang is always going to be in his t-shirt and skinny jeans. Like, Pat McGrath is always going to be with a bare face. Like, do you have, like, a signature look?
Interesting. Well, I used to wear a lot of black, whatever black used to work for me.
Yeah.
And now, I don't know, I'm just, and it's sad because I hope that by 30 I will have, like, a signature look, you know, just open my my closet and be like, I don't have to think too much to dress in the morning.
That's definitely
but
a goal.
I just love to explore, you know. Fashion is just so much fun. Yeah. And you're like, okay, I'm gonna try this like flirty dress today, and tomorrow I'm gonna try the off the shoulder, and tomorrow I can just wear a very strict shirt and black pants. And being a woman is, you know, it's the best
the
best, because you can wear anything you want.
Yeah. So depending on your mood. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I don't have like a go-to outfit. Mm-hmm. But I know when I want to be comfortable, a pair of like jeans and a white shirt always work for me.
Okay. Yeah. That's you really can't go wrong with that combination. It's like a classic look. Last question.
Yay.
When do you feel the most beautiful?
When I'm comfortable in my skin, when, you know, there's moments, sometimes you wake up in the morning and, I don't know, you have just like a big pimple on your face, or sometimes you come back from holiday and you think you gain a little weight, or, so I think now that working out is really part of my routine, because it keeps me balanced and focused, also at work, it's when I'm working out and I'm just like, okay, I feel good because I'm worked out. So
yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for coming.
It was great to hear from you.
Thanks for listening.